You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. First up this week, good news for Ontario First Nations. The current value of the Ontario First Nations Sovereign Wealth Fund has almost doubled since its creation in 2018. It could be worth $1 billion by 2030.
Since 2018 to currently, it's gone from a total of $321 million to $634 million. It's been a very, very good investment.
BC's Health Minister Adrian Dix announces a massive long-term care facility in Smithers.
We're proud to pay our taxes and put forward and make sure BC is a strong place to live. It's also nice when services come back, when investments come back to our communities, so that these are the livable places that we all dream of.
Also in BC, the city of Nanaimo was recently recognized as a welcoming Francophone community by the federal government.
Even if I was not speaking English, people were like super nice and really calm with me, say, no worries, like just take your time. People were just like patient, smiley. You have your place. It's a really, really nice place to live in.
And to Nova Scotia, where the Liverpool International Theatre Festival is asking the public to help host visiting actors.
LITF is a celebration of culture and theater and community, and it's a chance for us, meaning Liverpool, to experience the world.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Nice to have you with us again this week, Boris Chassaigne with you. We first turn to BC, where the provincial health minister, Adrian Dix, visited Smithers on Tuesday, August 20th, to announce 160 long-term care beds for the Buckley Valley. A new building will be built on the south end of Broadway Avenue. Construction will begin in 2028, and the facility is slated to open in 2030. And that's music to the ears of many seniors in Smithers. Some are on a four-year waiting list just for one of the 56 beds that currently exist in Smithers long-term care facilities. This new facility will be built in partnership between Northern Health, the town of Smithers, and Providence Living. Here's Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC.
One of the things that I believe coming out of the pandemic, and I believe going into the pandemic, is that we had to improve the quality and the amount of long-term care in BC. We have more people in BC, and we have an aging population, but that the quality of that care had to improve. Here in Smithers, of course, there is a profound need for long-term care. You see it in people's homes and the wait times they have to get into long-term care. You see it at the hospital, where people who should be in long-term care are in hospital beds. And today I'm excited to share the news that seniors living in northern BC will have greater access to care closer to home as we prepare to build a new long-term care home in Smithers. The new home in Smithers, which will be located at the south end of Broadway Avenue, will add 60 net new long-term care beds to Smithers and replace 56 beds from Bulkley Valley Lodge right here behind me for a total of 216 beds. The project's business plan is now approved. We are proceeding. We expect the construction, and this will begin in 2028, with the facility expected to open for residents in 2030.
The style of housing that will be built in Smithers will be organized as households, accommodating 12 to 13 residents, compared to the 40 or 50 units per household that has been more typical across the province.
The center has the added benefit of social and recreational spaces typical of a home, such as living rooms, dining rooms, activity areas, and access to outdoor spaces where seniors will be able to remain active and build relationships that directly and positively impact their quality of life. There will be other amenities, including art and activity rooms, a hair salon, a sacred space, and many quiet rooms where families can spend time together. This is a community within a community where seniors' well-being and happiness comes first.
This new facility will also offer an adult day program, 32 spaces, which will support older adults living independently at home by providing a social connection, exercise, and health checks for seniors, allowing them to maintain their homes longer while receiving extra support. Again, this new building will increase the number of beds in Smithers from 56 to 216.
Today, there are 1,176 long-term care beds in the entire Northern Health Authority. Prince Rupert, Haida Gwaii, to Fort St. John, and up from Quesnel, north. 1,176. We are adding, with this, the other projects announced, the other projects we're delivering is the 200 beds in Prince Shore. So more than 200 beds we're announcing today in Quesnel, beds in Fort St. James, dementia beds in Kitimat, beds in other communities. We are adding 689 beds in the north, reflecting the aging population of the region. This is only possible in a public health care system. It is only possible in a public health care system. This is a 58% increase in beds in this plan that Northern Health is engaging with. While we build a new hospital in Terrace, you know, you're helping pay for it. In Fort St. James, new hospital in Fort St. James, new tower in Prince George, new hospital in Dawson Creek, new ICU and ER in Quesnel. This is a breathtaking, historic investment in healthcare in the north, and the north deserves it. Too many of these projects have been waiting too long, and we are proceeding on all of them.
MLA Nathan Cullen spoke about the investment that the NDP government has made toward access to health care services and long-term care in the north.
This is a very large financial commitment from all of us as a province towards this community. And we know as Northerners, we're proud. We're also a little humble sometimes, and we are proud to contribute to the province. We're proud to pay our taxes and put forward and make sure BC is a strong place to live. It's also nice when services come back, when investments come back to our communities, so that these are the livable places that we all dream of. I am appreciative that we are going to have the time to design this facility together.
Next, Scott McCartan, representing Providence Healthcare, a faith-based nonprofit healthcare organization established by Providence Healthcare in 2017, highlighted the collaborative efforts between Providence Healthcare and Northern Health to establish and improve healthcare facilities in the north. The big ticket item was the cost advantage of this partnership, which was that there will be no regional hospital district contribution required for this long-term care facility, freeing up funds for other healthcare infrastructure projects.
It's very exciting. When they move into this new building, the 216 residents in Smithers will encounter a true home. Picturesque, a household layout that mirrors a traditional home, with a kitchen for in-home meal preparation, small intimate dining and living areas, shared by just 12 residents, and really inviting indoor and outdoor community spaces. The new model of care is somewhat enabled by the physical infrastructure, but it's more so delivered through new staffing models, innovative technology, and really a cultural shift in the way that we deliver care that ultimately rests on three foundational principles, and these are core to our beliefs. Number one, we believe that emotional connections matter most. We're not just constructing a building here, we're building a connected community. Number two, that residents direct each moment. Nobody tells any of you when to get up in the morning or when to go to bed. So why would we do that for our residents in their own home? And number three is that home isn't just a place. It's a profound feeling.
Do you have questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
So we stay out west as the Association des Francophones de Nanaimo is celebrating the news that Nanaimo has been awarded the title of Welcoming Francophone Community by the federal government. Under Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada, Nanaimo has joined the list of 23 other communities across the country with this new title announced this month. Nanaimo is the second community in British Columbia to receive the title. That's following Prince George in 2018. The recognition comes with additional funds and resources. Journalist Lauren McKenzie spoke with Julie Cloutier, the president of the Francophones of Nanaimo Association, and with Camille Véron, its executive director, who both applied so that Nanaimo would be recognized for this title. Both Cloutier and Véron said that through this initiative, the association will be given resources and funding to welcome all French-speaking newcomers to Nanaimo. Here they are speaking with Lauren McKenzie.
Being a welcoming Francophone community in a place, in an environment where English is really, really strong and represent the majority, it will give something more to Nanaimo compared to the other places around.
And I moved in Nanaimo and I never regret it, because even if I was not speaking English, because my English was zero at that time, 9 years ago, people were like super nice and really calm with me, say, like, no worries, like, just take your time, because sometimes I didn't understand, or I want to order, or I want to go buy something and I didn't understand the money. But people were just like patient and smiley. So that makes just me feel like, what a nice place to just try. Don't be scared to mix up, because you have your place and people will welcome you and will be patient.
What is great for a newcomer in Nanaimo, it's that many people, because it's a growing city, many people been living in different places and they come from different places. Or they were born in Nanaimo, but then they've been studying or living in other places and coming back to Nanaimo because it's a really, really nice place to live in. At the association, we see more and more newcomers coming, and we try to help them the more than we can. We also refer them to the specific services they can have, either locally in English or the Francophone one that would be more online. And we also give them like tips and advice as how is it to arrive as a Francophone from another culture here in Nanaimo. And there is some need as well from our partner. For example, L'École Océane, the Francophone school, needs to have more children coming in to develop and open new section and be more consistent. So they're really with us on that project, and that will benefit for them as well. And also all the services and business in Nanaimo will benefit from a bilingual workforce.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
The current value of the Ontario First Nations Sovereign Wealth of Funds portfolio has almost doubled since its creation in 2018. The fund was an agreement that saw 129 Ontario First Nations, including Six Nations, purchase more than 14 million shares of Hydro One. At that time, the Ontario government said the fund was an opportunity to advance economic development for Indigenous communities. First Nations were able to acquire Hydro One shares through a 25-year loan that was financed through the Ontario government for just over $259 million. Ron Jameson, board member for the fund, said that the fund now sits at $634 million, which is almost double its initial value. Jameson says the funds will likely not be distributed to First Nations involved until 2030. He adds that it's hard to estimate what the fund will be worth by that time, but says it's possible it could be worth $1 billion by then. Details with Andrew Dow in Oshawa, Ontario.
The Ontario First Nations Sovereign Wealth Fund has almost doubled its portfolio's wealth over the last 6 years. The fund, which was created in 2018, was an agreement that saw the Ontario First Nations Power Holdings Limited Partnership purchase more than 14 million shares of Hydro One. The limited partnership is owned by 129 Ontario First Nations, including Six Nations of the Grand River. Those First Nations were able to acquire the Hydro One shares through a 25-year loan that was financed through the government of Ontario. The loan amounted to just over $259 million and saw shares purchased at $18 per share. Additionally, another $29 million was also set aside in seed capital for the investment fund to pay board members and other administrative costs. The Ontario Ministry of Energy spoke on the creation of the fund in a 2016 media release that read, quote, "This agreement in principle demonstrates the goodwill envisioned by the political accord to promote stronger economic relations and is one of the many steps on Ontario's journey of healing and reconciliation with Indigenous peoples. If ratified, this new agreement will provide meaningful opportunities to First Nations for collective wealth creation and to advance economic development initiatives," end quote. Ron Jamieson, a board member for Ontario First Nations Sovereign Wealth Fund Limited Partnership, updated Six Nations Elected Council on the fund's growth during the August 19th General Council meeting. Jamieson detailed what Hydro One shares are currently selling for compared to what the shares were purchased for in 2018.
So the Hydro One shares have performed very well from, well, it says 2017, but 2018 to 2022, creating significant wealth for the First Nations. In fact, as of this morning, the value of a one share of Hydro One is $44. And remember that we had the opportunity to buy it at 18.
He also spoke on the overall growth the fund has seen since its creation.
So if you look at the investment performance, you can see what's happened from 2018 till currently. And, you know, that doesn't even reflect that the Hydro One shares are $44 now, because this slide is a couple months old, but, you know, it's pretty current. But you can see that since 2018 to currently, it's gone from a total of $321 million to $634 million. And so that is stellar return.
Jamieson says the Sovereign Wealth Fund's board have gradually begun to sell some of the shares and reinvest those profits back into other funds to protect the Sovereign Wealth Fund and its profits.
We're going to continue on that track of, on a gradual basis, liquidating some Hydro One shares into a broader investment portfolio. That's very good for the Sovereign Wealth Fund because you're not betting on one particular stock at any time. Now, we still have a lot of Hydro One shares remaining, and we just want to do it judiciously, meaning to have the best timing we can to sell shares in the market and convert it into other opportunities.
Jamieson says that Ontario First Nations have not begun to pay off the initial loan with the government of Ontario, and he explained why that is and how it benefits the First Nations involved with the fund.
We have not paid any principal on the Hydro One loan that the government of Ontario granted to us. There's a good reason for that, because the money is so cheap, you don't want to start paying it back with money you're making, because you can reinvest it, but it's just so cheap to use Ontario's money that it's just perfect. So at some date in the future, we will pay off. Like, if we paid off our loan right now, we would be, instead of having $634 million in overall, we would have $250 million approximately less than that number. We see no advantage in repaying the Ontario government. And they agree. We met with them a few times because they kind of had to bless our strategy. They want to make sure they have collateral on their loan. So we've met with them a few times and they agree that our strategy is the right one. Even though Hydro One is a great investment opportunity, it's not the only one.
He also explained that 2030 is likely when First Nations will see revenues from this fund be distributed back to the Ontario First Nations communities.
We cannot distribute until the initial seed capital, which was $29 million, reaches a value of $90 million or 12 years, whichever comes first. 12 years would make it 2030. So we've got a number of years here yet before we consider distributing the profits to First Nation communities. And right now, if you distributed it, it sounds like a lot of money, but if you cut it over 129 partners, it really isn't. It's not anything like, for example, the OFNLP, the gaming revenue, which is substantially more, okay, over that number of communities. So we feel that we're going to keep doing our job, and hopefully get it up to a point where it'd be very easy for us to repay Ontario and make a distribution to First Nation communities. But as I say, we're a number of years or dollars from that point.
Jameson spoke on what the fund's total revenue could look like when it's time to distribute money back to those Ontario First Nations involved.
You know, I know that it's gone from 230 odd million to over 624 million.
It could grow up to a billion.
Absolutely, it could. In fact, that's my personal belief, that when we get to 2030, it will be a billion. That's a lot of money, but it's still going to get divided up in some basis of formula. So, but it's been a very, very good investment. And as I say, we have the best advisors, the best legal counsel, et cetera, to guide us.
Six Nations elected council accepted the update from Ron Jameson as information and also approved for him to return to council annually to provide updates on the fund. I'm Andrew Dow, and this news story is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, which supports the creation of original civic journalism.
Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
And our final stop will be in the Maritimes, where one of the only international theater festivals in Atlantic Canada, the Liverpool International Theater Festival, just put out an urgent call. It's asking for residents, local residents, to help provide accommodations for some 90 actors and crew members expected to arrive in Liverpool, Nova Scotia in October. This year, troops from Morocco, Egypt, Italy, Switzerland, Wales, and the U.S. will be putting on one-act plays between October 17 and the 20th in an event that celebrates the theater and international friendship. The local theater group Winds of Change from Liverpool will also be putting on a play at the festival. Here's Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
It happens every 2 years. It's less than 2 months away, and the organizers of the Liverpool International Theater Festival want you to be part of it. The festival is looking for local residents to open their homes and help welcome the almost 90 people coming to Liverpool from 10 different countries for the four-day event. The volunteer-driven festival is celebrating its 16th edition from October 17th to 20th at the Astor Theatre. This year, amateur theatre troops from Morocco, Egypt, the country of Georgia, Mexico, Italy, Switzerland, Wales, and the U.S. will be putting on one-act plays in an event that celebrates theatre and international friendship. Winds of Change Theatre Group from Liverpool will also be putting on a play at the festival. Jean Robinson is the festival's chairwoman.
They are one-act plays, and they have to be between 25 minutes long and 50 or 55 minutes long. And so it's a great introduction to theatre and different types of theatre for folks that may have an interest in that.
Deborah Radall is in charge of LITF's marketing and promotions.
LITF is a celebration of culture and theater and community, and it's a chance for us, meaning Liverpool, to experience the world.
The festival relies on 40 to 60 volunteers from the community to make it happen. Members of the troops are billeted at homes around Queens County. This year, organizers are putting an urgent call out for people to open their homes to the actors and crews coming to Liverpool. LITF asks hosts to provide a bed and some breakfast for festival participants. The festival looks after everything else, including other meals and transportation. Hosts also get 2 free tickets to the play involving their guests. Radall and her husband Blair have hosted troops in their home for many previous festivals.
It's a wonderful experience. My experience, Blair and I's experience, has been really great with that. We've hosted, well, pretty much every year we've hosted and have made wonderful friendships and connections. And
It is quite unique for a theater festival. It's a bed and breakfast situation. What we ask of our hosts, at a minimum, is to provide a bed, provide breakfast for them in the mornings, and to pick them up when they arrive, if it's a reasonable time. If it's a later time, then the drivers will take them to your home. So that's really basically all we ask. At a minimum interaction is to make them welcome in your home, give them something to eat in the mornings, and our festival is designed to pick up all the rest of the stuff. You're not obligated to entertain. You're not obligated to do anything more, really, than provide them a bed and breakfast.
Robinson said hosts and guests have made lasting connections.
Hosts can be as engaged in the festival as they want to be. We know that troops have, as we've said before, these have become lifelong friendships and also new experiences. People have gotten to go skating for the first time with their host, or even being taken to the ocean to see
the beach for the first time,
being on a boat, going out on a lobster boat, or things like that that have just kind of cemented those relationships.
Rattle says they're still looking for space for about 40 troop members. Troops and potential hosts fill out questionnaires so that organizers can help make sure the experience is as positive as possible for everybody.
It's a process that's not just, we're just going to check somebody on your doorstep without having a conversation about what works best for you and what works best for them.
If you're interested in becoming a host for the Liverpool International Theatre Festival, you can contact info@litf.ca, check out their website at litf.ca, or message them at their Facebook page. I'm Rick Conrad.
And so that's it for us. Thanks to our journalists, Rick Conrad, Pamela Hassan, Andrew Dow, Lauren McKenzie, to our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. Boris Chassin, your host and producer, thanks for having us again this week. And until the next, goodbye.
Or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Radio@frequencynews.ca.